Hi, everyone. This is Robin Clare with Tributary. We are live today, and we are preempting our scheduled talk with Dr. Sandro regarding bacteriophage research in order to speak with Dr. Michael Rice. We will air parts 1 and 2 with Sandro beginning September 30th. Michael Rice called me earlier this week wanting to share his focus on redirecting national conversation. Michael's doctorates in naturopathic medicine and holistic philosophy are enhanced by his lifelong study of the Aramaic philosophy and language. So stay tuned. This is Tributaries. Michael, are you there?
I certainly am.
All right.
Nice to be here. Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Well, Michael, initially I think we need to have you brief us on the Aramaic tradition and where it comes from.
Well, the Aramaic language is a language that actually is the original language in five of the world's major religions. And it's a language that is unique in languages on the planet. It describes conditions, states of mind, through the very structure of the language by suffixes and prefixes, and shows an understanding of how the human mind works that's beyond any other language on the planet. And it has some real keys for how we as human beings function and some very practical tools for how to change the way that we are functioning.
So I think today, in order to perhaps have any kind of redirecting going on with conversation, the mindset is somewhere that we need to perhaps start.
Yes, yes, that's the place I'd like to go. And the thing that inspired me to call you earlier this week, you know, we've done earlier interviews, and I was motivated by the fact that about 3 months ago someone called me and reminded me of a tape that I did 20 years ago called Pyramid Prophecy, where I looked into the structure of the pyramids and what kind of messages were there. And the passageway that leads to the king's chamber is a passageway that, if it's divided up by a system of measurement called the pyramidal inch, shows virtually every important date in history for thousands of years. And when you get to the end of this passageway, you're faced with stepping up into the king's chamber or going down into what they call the pit of ignorance, or what has been known as the pit of ignorance. And the final date that's engraved on that passageway in stone and has been there for in excess of 10,000 years, interestingly enough, this is what someone pointed out to me 3 months ago, having totally forgotten that date from when I did this tape originally, is September the 17th, 2001. Tomorrow, as a matter of fact. And many people have said, well, does that mean the end of the world? And no, I don't believe so. I believe it does, however, mean that it's a point at which humanity is going to make a choice. And we're either going to step up to a higher level of thinking, a higher attitude of mind, or we're going to carry on with the conversation that's been going on the planet for perhaps 5,000 years or more, where, as we've seen over and over again, someone does an attack and somebody responds with another attack, thinking, well, if I just wipe out all the bad guys, then the world will be safe for me. And of course, in wiping out all the bad guys, we've just created more murder and war.
Right. There is no... It's like the antibiotic-resistant bacteria. It's the same mindset. And it seems that now we need to know enough that patriotism and nationalism aren't really quite relevant anymore. And it's not to say we don't love America or anything like that. You know, it's not about that. It's about broadening perspective.
Well, there's a powerful statement that Albert Einstein made as a physicist that addresses that very question that you just asked, or statement you just made. And he says this: the human being is a part of the whole called by us universe, a part limited in time and space. He experiences himself, his thoughts and feelings, as separated from the rest, a kind of optical delusion of his consciousness. This delusion is a kind of prison for us, restricting us to our personal desires and to affection for a few persons nearest us. Our task must be to free ourselves from this prison by widening our circle of compassion to embrace all living creatures and the whole of nature in its beauty. And to me, what Einstein was saying there is that our eye tricks us into thinking we're separate from others. That's the optical delusion. The truth is that if we could see on an energetic level, my background is in electronics and physics, if we could see on an energetic level a different frequency than what our eye shows us, we see the energy that links us all together. We are inextricably connected in one body. And though we can cut ourselves off from awareness of what's happening, what appear to be other bodies, we still suffer the pain of their suffering and vice versa. And as we can raise ourselves to that level that Einstein invited us to do, the level that he was able to see, we're going to find ourselves in a much different process in life than the one we're engaged in today.
Yes, and I think as we do want to look at the national conversation that's going on, it's wonderful sensationalism to have had such a tragic incident and then have America unite because of that. But that's like, you know, making yourself feel better because your opponent just broke their leg or something like that. You know, there's a better way to make yourself feel better or to feel powerful.
Well, the nation is in tremendous pain and mourning and suffering right now.
I'm shocked.
But the truth is that a lot of Americans live daily in tremendous pain and mourning and suffering. And this gives a focus where, out of our anger and our rage, perhaps for a little while we can anesthetize that pain. And the truth is, I believe that hostility is an actual drug. It produces a chemistry within us that anesthetizes our pain. And so it does feel better to stand in hostility. However, if you notice, and oftentimes in my workshops and seminars, I'll ask the question, how many here have ever done something that today you regret having done? And, of course, everybody kind of giggles and puts their hand up. But when you get right down to it, you'll find that 100% of the time that people do things that later they come to regret, they were either in hostility or fear. And hostility and fear in the Aramaic are mindsets that compromise intelligence. If you go back 2,000 years ago, they asked a great teacher from 2,000 years ago about the first order of business in this thing of being human. They said in the law. And the response that they got, and we're told that the word love was used, but actually it wasn't the word love that was used. But the man named Jesus named three objects of attention. And in the Aramaic, his teaching is not so much religious as here's how life works. He names three objects of attention. He says you must have, and the word in Aramaic is rachma, not love, for God, for neighbor, and for self, for upon this hangs the law and all its prophets. And that rachma is what in Aramaic was called a tuv, a mindset. And that mindset is one where the filters that are set in the mind are those filters of love. And with those filters set, our minds will generate much different realities than the ones that they set out of hostility or fear. Observe the person in a more personal situation that's in conflict with, or pardon me, in a loving space with someone that they love. You know, I love you, I honor you, I cherish you, I will love you forever. But then that same person turns around and gives them the look. Everybody knows what the look is, I suppose. And what happens? All of a sudden, this mind does not show what is loved about the object of attention, about the loved one, but rather what there is to fear or what there is irritating about that loved one. And all of a sudden, the words, I love you, I honor you, I cherish you, I will love you forever, are not utterable from that other mindset. And what Jesus was saying 2,000 years ago is we need to be in charge of the mindset that we hold. And when the condition of rachma, an actual filter that sets a tube, an attitude of mind in place, becomes available to us, and it's a much higher level of mind, what I would see as the equivalent of that symbol of the King's Chamber, elevating ourselves to a new level. And right now, much of our dialogue is out of our pain and our hostility and our fear, but wisdom does not usually follow hostility and fear. And much of the conversation today is literally, though we put others down for an attack against innocent people, many in the conversation today are talking genocide. We're talking what's being spoken of in the national conversation is a willingness to literally, quote, eliminate states. Now, to just think of that for a moment, how many innocents must die to eliminate a state because perhaps they harbor, maybe even unknowingly, what we call a terrorist. And we've got to, I think that America perhaps is the only nation on the face of the earth that's capable of introducing this other dimension, this dialogue about the condition or the tuv that in Aramaic was called love. And that as we can do that, we'll start to see and we'll start to act differently. Will it be easy? No. You don't solve 5,000 years of conflict and war, of brother killing brother, in an instant, in a moment's conversation. It's going to take our willingness to look deeply into ourselves and see our part in the process. In my book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again?, I look on a more personal level at what it takes to look at the responsibilities that we have for how our lives unfold, and that we are, in fact, by nature, creative beings. But when we decide we don't want to be responsible for what we're creating, we can enter into denial and pretend we have nothing to do with it and it's all them. But the fact is, every time it's happened to us, we've been there. And it's time for us as human beings to wake up to the role we play, the part we play, to ask some tough questions and start to answer those questions with this Aramaic mindset of love, this tuv that was called rachma.
Mm-hmm. Now, are the three objects of attention you were talking about from Jesus, were they all in the rachma, or is rachma one of the three objects of attention?
No, what he was saying, when they asked him, you know, there's a statement that's made where a lawyer asked Jesus, you know, what is most important in the law? And Jesus replies, you must love, that is, have rachma, this attitude of mind, for God. You must love God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your body, with all your spirit. And the second is like unto it, you must love your neighbor as yourself. So the three objects of attention are God, neighbor, and self. And in the Aramaic language, the word neighbor is anybody that we think about. If we're thinking about the terrorist, and this may be a tough one to swallow, that hides out in a foxhole in Afghanistan or wherever he might be, he is our neighbor. And the loving neighbor doesn't mean self-sacrifice, it doesn't mean put your head on the chopping block, but rather it is a key attitude of mind that allows the highest levels of intelligence to pervade your own mind. It's not about somebody else. It's about how to see the highest and best possible action instead of block. You know, the Greeks said in their philosophy, whom the gods would destroy, they first make angry. If you go into a courtroom and observe the opposing counsel as they get someone on the stand, what's the first thing they try to do? To get them angry or fearful. Yeah. Because the angry, fearful mind compromises itself. It makes mistakes. And to restore this tuv is the first order of business.
Absolutely. Now, terrorism is in the eye of the beholder. It's just, are you looking at it from the left or the right, or from up or for down? And so,
well, that's one of the tough questions we need to ask is, who trained Bin Laden at the tactics that he uses? And when we trained him, when the U.S. funded him to do this sort of thing against Russia, he was a freedom fighter. And now, because he holds his own goals instead of the goals of the United States, we changed the name of it in order to create this hostility. And, you know, an angry, hurting child is going to do whatever that angry, hurting child needs to do to get somebody's attention. And certainly, this has gotten the world's attention. And, you know, again, I don't pretend to have any easy answers as to what's going to correct this whole situation. But what I do know is that for 5,000 years, one group has killed another. You can bet the very conversation that's happening today has happened in 100 cities, in 100 tents in the desert, where one group was hurt, damaged by another, usually their brother that they were at war with, and said, let's gather and marshal all the forces we can, and we'll go out and kill them, and then we won't have to deal with this anymore. That conversation has happened 1,000 times in history, I would bet. And it's happening again. And we can't kill enough people to stop it from happening. There's no possibility of that. And what we will do by more of the same is we will simply create more resolve. We will steal their resolve. We will strengthen their resolve to make sure that the next generation comes up with even more devious ways of destroying what they perceive to be the enemy. And as we can enter into a dialogue with ourselves and create a different tuv, come from a different mindset instead of institutionalized violence. You know, I think that the United States has some of the sweetest, most supportive, most constructive people on planet Earth. There's recently circulating around the net is a letter that was written 25 years ago by a Canadian broadcaster where he talks about how the United States is the first one there globally when there's a problem to offer support and aid. And there, and hence I think that we have the capacity to bring this new level to this conversation called war, this new mindset to this conversation called war, and actually find a way to, in our own lives, individually, and then collectively, produce a different result. You know, you look at the terrorism that happens in our country on a daily basis without any foreign invader. You know, 10 times as many people as died in this tragedy die each day from, or pardon me, each year in this country from drunken drivers. How many fathers or mothers terrorize their children into obeying? How many teachers terrorize their students into obeying? How many ministers stand up in the pulpit and try to terrorize people into being good? We are creative beings, and when we focus on terror, we create a result in our lives that's called terrorism. You know, so many people in the media, probably 10 times in the last week, I've heard someone say, you know, it looked just like a movie. Think about that. If we're creators, and I would offer that the way that we create is by the focus that we have, if we are creators and we're focused on those kinds of scenes, we've been told, many movies are being held back because they're too close to what happened right now in the national video world, the movie world. What happens to people who are creators who are focused repeatedly on violence and producing that kind of terror in the world?
Right. I had to, on the way over here today to the studio, I was actually thinking, I can just imagine what this movie is going to be like. You know, who's going to be the first director to come out with the movie? When I just see that all of the media that's going on with this, you know, how many angles do they have of the plane going into the building in New York, for instance? And to be airing this daily, 24 hours a day, it just is, I think that in itself is such an injustice to the American public because it's so disabling.
Yes, I agree 100%. And how many minds does it take? People say, well, but how are you going to change bin Laden's mind or anybody else who's in that mindset? Well, fortunately, and with my background in physics, when I first heard the Aramaic language, one of the things that excited me about it is that I see it as a physics language. And when they spoke of little leavening leavens the whole loaf, they were talking about critical mass in physics. And that if you can get a critical mass, a core group of people, we don't have to go and change every mind on the planet. When a core group gets a hold of a higher idea, the energy of that idea, because we are energy beings, will permeate the whole planet. The leavening will leaven the whole of humanity. And who knows how close we might be to that critical mass and a shift taking place.
That's very true. How close are we and how it's not possible to know.
Exactly. There's a poem that I have in the end of my book. It's entitled, Will You Make the Difference? And it goes like this. Tell me the weight of a snowflake, a hawk asked a wild dove. Nothing more than nothing was the answer. In that case, I must tell you a marvelous story, said the hawk. I sat on the branch of a fir close to its trunk. It began to snow. Not heavily, not a raging blizzard. No, just like in a dream, without any violence. Since I had nothing better to do, I counted the snowflakes settling on the twigs and needles of my branch. Their number was exactly 3,741,952 when the next snowflake dropped onto the branch. Nothing more than nothing, as you say, and the branch broke off. Having said that, the hawk flew away. The dove, since Noah's time, an authority on peace, thought about the story for a while, and finally said with resolve, perhaps only one person's voice is lacking for peace to come about in the world. And perhaps America can bring to an ancient conflict, to an ancient hatred, a present love that will activate that too in every mind it touches, and we may see the transformation of war on our planet.
So having come to this conclusion, Michael, with the Aramaic and the three objects of attention, how did you approach it for your own self initially?
Well, the focus of my work, the core of my work, is the process of forgiveness. And the word forgive in Aramaic doesn't mean I let you off the hook for the terrible thing you've done to me. That kind of forgiveness doesn't work. The word forgiveness in Aramaic is a tool with which you reach into yourself, into your own mind, and you undo the source of the pain that is there, kind of as a foundation. Reality is not what we've been taught it is. Reality is not what's happening out there in the world. Reality is what's happening between our ears. You know, everybody in your listening audience right now, through their own ears, is experiencing the same actuality as everyone else. But I guarantee that each person has a different conversation going on in their heads, a different reality happening for them. And when we experience a painful reality, we have two options. We can pretend that what's going on between our ears belongs to somebody else, and it's their fault that we're experiencing it, and we can become hostile at them, or we can even, in the traditional sense, forgive them, which leaves our painful reality and its mind's our mind's capacity to produce that reality fully intact. Or we can stop and say, you know, I'm experiencing pain here. I think I'll forgive. And we start to go inside of ourselves to forgive those realities that are the source of our pain. That's the real forgiveness. And when that is done, we start to come more and more to a space of centered, focused love and produce different results in our lives. And by the way, my book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again, which focuses on how to do the forgiveness process, is available free online if anybody wants to download it. My website is www.whyagain.com. The book's there free to download. It's in Spanish, it's in German, it's in English. And if someone wants to know how to forgive, you know, we've only got a few minutes, and getting into the how of the forgiveness process, because it's so radically different from the Aramaic than what we've been taught, is just not reasonable to do in this time frame. But the book is there free for download for anybody that wants to download it, and it's called Why Is This Happening to Me Again, and What You Can Do About It.
Right. Now, Michael, we have about 6 minutes left, and I thought I would open the phone lines if there's anyone listening to Tributaries right now that would like to give us a call. And the number is 442-4242, area code 303. And so if there's anyone out there that has a comment they would like to make, please do feel free to call.
Might I read a prayer while we're waiting to see if anyone wants to call in?
Yes.
And I'd just like to invite us all in that mindset, that tuv of love, to focus on the pain and the suffering that has happened, the lives that were lost, those souls that were severed from their bodies so abruptly, and the families that are suffering as a result of it, the workers that are working, and that we join in holding a space of prayer. And someone emailed me this prayer today, and it's called A Circle of Light and Love, and I thought it was powerful. Know the truth. In the darkness, there is always a burning light. It is a grand cathedral inside of you. And the more you tend the light, the brighter it will become. And in time, its radiance will become so bright that the darkness will be unable to penetrate it. Know this truth, too. It is better to love eternal things than to judge them, for they are very difficult to judge rightly, and they can never be wrongly loved. It is better to raise ourselves to higher things through love than to reduce them to our level of judgment. Now is the time to create a circle of light and love, a power so great that no darkness can surround it. Now is the time to cast this circle around the world. And know this truth, light is more powerful than darkness. The one heart joined in light with another is more powerful than 1,000 hearts in darkness. That in the presence of love there are miracles. That the love is the great power in the universe. That just one person can make a difference. Now is the time to light a candle and say, in the presence of love there are miracles. And to dedicate this candle to love, to peace, now and forevermore. Mm-hmm. And when the hundredth, the thousandth, the millionth person joins our circle, we will have reached a critical mass, and love and light will reign, and darkness cannot stay the light in the light.
All right, Michael, we have Elizabeth on the air. Elizabeth, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi, Michael. I just caught the end of this program, and I was very inspired and grateful. You know, I feel there's a huge crisis slash opportunity going on, and I'm really grateful any time I hear voices speaking that. And, you know, how we can use this war to see it as, you know, the personal wars that we engage in every day.
Well, it certainly is an opportunity for us to step up to a new level as human beings. And I think this country is a country that, when in the past no country has yet been able to do it, that we can bring a new level of light and a new level of love to this whole conversation we call war, and bring solution and resolution to it. I think it's time for us to do that.
Elizabeth, thank you for your call.
Okay, and I actually just have one other question. I didn't get the full website.
Oh, the website is www.whyawhy,
mm-hmm.
again, A-G-A-I-N,
mm-hmm.
that's all one word, whyagain.com. And you can just click on the book, and it'll take you right to where you can download it.
I'd like to try and get to another caller now.
Thank you very much.
Hello?
Hello?
Yes.
Hi. I'm calling also because I am so grateful for what you are doing, Robin and Michael, for coming on.
Okay, Tina, thank you.
I've watched all these American flags go up, and I thought what I really want is a flag of the Earth, a flag of the planet.
So let's join and let's get people who know that that's possible speaking in the media. Call every radio talk show you can, every television talk show. Write to your senators, write to your congressmen, and let them know that there is another conversation that needs to take place. We need to mobilize now. The last date shown in the pyramid for whether or not we make the step upward to that king's chamber, to that other level, is tomorrow, September 17th, 2001. I think we need to be motivated to take real clear action in this.
Gina, thank you so much for that suggestion. That's great.
Thank you for everything.
Hello, is this Ellen?
Yes, hello.
Hi, Ellen.
Oh, thank you. This has been a blessing. Yes, we need more programs like this. And I find that if I even listen to NPR very long, I get depressed. And I think what we need to do is lift our consciousness into another level rather than in the mass consciousness. And meditate with friends and gather with groups. And I understand there are going to be peace demonstrations across the country in the coming weeks. And I think we need to express that we don't want to go to war, and that that there is a different way and a new level.
Let's speak out.
Yeah.
To the media that
exactly.
that happens, and to the political system that happens. And I can be reached through my website, and I'll be delighted. Any radio interview at any time, day or night, I'll be delighted to do it and help to bring this conversation forward into our country and into our consciousness. America can do something that's never been seen on the planet before.
Right.
It can heal this tit-for-tat war that's happened for thousands of years in the Mideast. We don't have to stoop to that level.
Michael, if you have a few more minutes, we've been given time from the next show, Present Edge. We can take a few more minutes if you can with these callers.
I have as much time as possible. What else is there to do when we're in this kind of crisis?
All right. Yes, go ahead.
I also wanted to say that there are some gatherings for this 17th date.
Yes.
And in Egypt, it starts tonight. So actually, some of the meditations, I think it's at Hannah Kroger's today at 4. There will be groups gathering, and it is a potent time.
Well, if you're at any of those groups, invite people to speak out. One of the things I know from the Aramaic that we work with a thing in a course I teach called Laws of Living, I've developed from the Aramaic, called regulatory speech. And for something to come from to behavior, it has to be in speech first.
Yes.
We need to get this into the speech of our leaders. We need to get this into the speech of people. And as we do, our minds will literally start to produce different realities, different behavior-driving realities that we're inclined to follow through and give power to.
You know, I think that I'd like to interject right here that language is so important. And I think a lot of what needs to get said is difficult using the English language. And I'm sure that the Aramaic is more prepared.
The Aramaic is unbelievable in that regard. It is just such a phenomenal study. We have in our hands the oldest known Aramaic text on the planet. We're in the process of getting that up online, a text that goes back to 164 AD with the actual words of Jesus in his native language. And in the context of that culture, the meaning of the words is so different from what we see coming out of Greek philosophy, which is what has, by and large, ruled the theology of the West.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for your call, and we'll take another caller right now. Is this Richard?
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, Richard.
This is Bill.
Oh, Bill.
Oh, Bill.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. I've been having something go through my mind. A version by Robert Bly of Kabir, and the last line is that when you deep inside you, there's a loaded gun. How can you have God? And I'm trying to unload that gun.
Hey, I join you in that, my brother.
Okay. Thank you.
Teilhard de Chardin says it very powerfully. Someday, after mastering the wind, the waves, the tide, and gravity, we shall harness for God the energies of love. Then, for a second time in the history of the world, we will have discovered fire. And I really, Bob, join you. I thank you for bringing that thought up. And join you in each of us on a personal level disarming ourselves of that loaded gun deep within us and coming to the space where we find deep in our souls the love that we were originally designed to live with.
Yes.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Bill, for calling. Hello?
Hello.
Hi.
I want to thank you and your guest for this wonderful moment of respite from the swirling, raging winds of controversy and ill will. Peace is the answer. Love is the answer. What was the question again?
Who cares what the question is? You've got the answer.
And, you know, as our last caller just quoted, and Robert Bly had said, if we have that loaded gun within us, and so many carry such childhood rage, what, you know, it's like the hostility has been institutionalized and it's become the norm. And
I think it's
let me just quote a couple of paragraphs from my book. Many children are raised in homes where being treated who are now in control tend to become abusers themselves. Abuse does not become sane because it is institutionalized, accepted, or looks normal. And then the character that I'm having a dialogue with replies to me, well, it is necessary to fight back and protect yourself, Michael. My reply is, it is participation in that kind of thinking that is causing violence to become the norm in our culture. People tend to become so close to what they do, they cannot see their own insanity. Be assured that from within the society ruled by the quote-unquote volcano gods, sacrificing a young maiden now and then was not bizarre at all. Torturing and burning people at the stake was not strange from within the belief system of the Inquisitors. It was a reasonable way to save souls. Reason, when not consciously governed, can justify anything it can conceive of, anything it decides to do. We live in a world where murder, war, and violence are justified and condoned. Verbal, emotional, and physical abuses are considered standard in many relationships and family systems. Parents lash out at children. Teachers think it reasonable in the name of quote-unquote discipline to verbally abuse, attack, and put down the children they are quote-unquote teaching. A child who kills is no longer an uncommon phenomenon. The media regularly portray little violences as acceptable. Family members at each other's throats, attacks, sarcasm, and put-downs are presented as witty, normal human interaction. Ever wonder why the divorce rate is so high? Healthy relationships are seldom represented or modeled anywhere in our world or media.
Did you have anything else to say here, Richard, with us?
Well, the Rastafarians speak of word, sound, power. And I think in this time, we must use words like beloved.
Yes.
And uprising.
Absolutely.
Peace, my friends.
Join you in
Thank
that.
You so much.
Enjoy.
In the Aramaic language, Richard, when we're told that the opening words in the book of John say, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was made flesh and dwelt amongst us. In Aramaic, what it says is, in the beginning was the mind energy. That
the vibe.
We initiate our creative process with mind energy, and the mind
the
energy
vibe which
flesh.
Was before and is now and always shall be, my friend.
Yes.
Please, my friend, breathe, relax. there's a tendency when one gets on the microphone to have the adrenaline push one's brain. Gandhi said, nonviolence, which is a quality of the heart, cannot be attained through an appeal to the brain. Peace, my brother.
Peace to you too, my brother.
Thank you.
Thank you for your call.
Hello, Roberta?
Yes, this is Roberta.
Thanks for calling.
Well, thank you for giving people in Boulder a platform and somebody as wonderful as Michael to speak out. And I would like to say that the majority of us have so little education and knowledge about the Middle East and how those people think about us. And are we thinking about what we did to create this? And I'm hoping that the press will stop being sensationalistic and start being the press that can help us by having shows like what you're doing, so that we as a nation can begin educating ourselves. I think that there's a big empty spot in our understanding in how we have played our part here. I also want to say that I just heard from Andy Goldman. Andy and Jonathan Goldman are saying that in Boulder, in front of the courthouse at 7 o'clock tonight, many people who think we are thinking are meeting together to be the light workers that we're meant to be. And I just hope that Michael and all of you in all of your communities, that we can encourage now being responsible and taking up that mantle that says, you know, there's a spark of love within me, and my responsibility is to join with the masses so that we can create that critical mass that Michael was speaking of.
Yes, and that spark of love exists in every one of us, including Bin Laden.
Indeed.
And that when we can see that, we'll start to see the place that Einstein spoke of, where we are one.
That's
right. Where we are connected. And in that space, our problems will begin to heal. Let me share a story. I did a workshop in Atlanta 3 or 4 years ago, and a woman came up to me before the workshop and said, Michael, I want to thank you for saving my life. It's like, well, what do you mean? How's that? She said, well, last year when you were here speaking, I came to your workshop on forgiveness, and you spoke about holding a space of love. And she said, about 6 months ago, I went home to my apartment, went inside, locked my door, and was confronted with a man with a knife who told me he was going to rape and murder me. And he held a knife to my throat and started to strip my clothes off. And I had no question in my mind that I was going to die. And she said, all of a sudden, your voice rang in my head about holding a space of love. And she said, I don't know how I did it, but all of a sudden, I could look at this man and see the terror in his face. Now, she said, I had no doubt whatsoever that he was going to kill me. He was starting to rape me at that moment. And she said, as soon as I saw the terror in his face, I instantly shifted to such compassion for him that I totally forgot about my fear. And she said, at that moment, he dropped his knife, began to cry, and ran out of my apartment.
Can we do that as
And
we?
I suspect that what happened was, for the first time in this man's life, someone saw him through the eyes of compassion.
Mm-hmm.
And someone was able to see the spark in him that is as divine as a spark in every one of us.
So isn't that our challenge?
Our pain is dismantled.
Isn't that our challenge as a nation now?
That is our challenge, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a deep dialogue, because the opposite has been going on for so long. It's not going to be an easy task to look at and undo thousands of years of hatred and vengeance. But the alternative to that is genocide of our planet, I believe.
I believe you're right.
Roberta, thank you for bringing up about that rally. If anyone has any questions, there's a 303-823-9040 phone number for information for that tonight at the courthouse here.
Great, and let's remember that we want to go beyond the choir in speaking this. We need to get on the media. We need to speak it out into the culture so that others who I've spoken with several people in the last few days who went, gee, Michael, I never thought of it that way. And when we can give an alternative way of thinking, people can start to move in that direction. And it happens through our language when we speak out and people hear that there might be another reality possible to entertain with all that's happening here.
Yes.
Thank you, Robin. I'll hang up.
Okay.
Thank you for your call.
Thank you,
Blessings.
Teresa?
Yeah, this is Therese from Boulder.
Therese, hi.
Yeah. Hi, Therese. Hi.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, in response to Mr. Michael's, I can't remember exactly, regarding love, I just want to say a couple of things. One is, for a nation such as America that declares itself the nation of God, the nation of God, America would declare this word of God not only in theory, but also in practice.
And that's a challenge.
Facing
something like this, it's a big challenge to face up to.
Mm-hmm. Because when we go around and prove love, I do remember one incident when I met a guy, and he saw me coming dressed up. He waited for me at a payphone, and he pulled out some money. And as I was returning from wherever I was going, he pulled out some money, and he said, "What are you selling?" And I said, "What do you want to buy?" He said, "Anything." And I said, "Well, let's talk." So he and I started talking. As we went on and talked and talked, it was a black guy. He said, "Would you want to go ahead and have a breakfast with me?" And I said, "Yes, let's go have breakfast." We talked while we were eating breakfast. And I learned one thing from him. He came out and said to me, "You know, for as long as I've been raised and born in America, I've never had one person, neither blacks nor whites, accepted me and was willing to share breakfast or acknowledge me as a person. But for the first time, you are from Africa. You are here sitting and eating breakfast with me. For the first time, I feel important in my life. I never felt important. I never felt loved before."
Sounds like you changed his life forever.
So ever since that day, I turned around and I said to myself, "My daughter has stolen 2 brand new cars that I bought. What am I doing wrong?" So I looked at myself in the mirror and I said, "I must turn my life around and I must change." That was another second day when I turned my life around and changed. And I realized that it wasn't other people. It wasn't through retaliation. It was the way I was living and the way I was doing things. I needed to turn around. That rebuilt the World Trade Center. America needs not to rebuild the World Trade Center Foundation on the evil spirit it was founded upon. But instead, America needs to rebuild the World Trade Center on a good spirit. We, the American people, should change and start all over again and advocate this love not only in theory but also in practice. Behold, that'll be the very beginning. Not only anywhere else, I'm speaking even for myself and for every living soul on earth, and everyone in the world, in other nations, would turn around and follow America.
Well, I think that America has perhaps the most powerful, loving spirit on the planet. Are there things that are out of place in our country? Yes, of course, we're humans. And we have that spirit, and we have that capacity, and I join you in being able to bring it forward and live it in our world, especially today.
Yeah, and
thank you for your call.
Michael, I feel like I have to add right here, you know, I'm not convinced that we as a country have the most of anything. You know, I think it's important not to draw that kind of line right now, actually.
Okay, I'm not saying the most in terms of we've got a quantity, but I think we have a capacity to bring forward something that hasn't been seen yet on the planet.
Yes, I think that.
Or at least not seen, and I probably shouldn't say not seen yet on the planet, not seen in mass demonstration.
Yes.
I think we can bring that forward. I think there is enough love, there's enough capacity to do that here
right.
today.
And Therese, I thank you for joining us today on Tributary.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Blessings.
Thank you.
And Michael, I thank you so much. I have to thank Alan, who's going to be presenting the Present Edge here in just a couple of minutes. And Michael, I appreciate so much that you've been with us to share yourself with us today on Tributaries.
Well, love and blessings, and may the light of God surround us, the love of God enfold us, the power of God protect us, the presence of God wash over us, the grace of God heal us, and may we have enough wisdom to know that wherever we are, God was there ahead of us and is there now.
Yeah.
Blessings to our nation.